Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rebecca, who is here to speak with us about parenting and practice, a recent group coaching opportunity. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks, Jen.
And I think, am I correct that it's completed, that it has,
yes.
That coaching session has completed? Yeah.
Yes, it ended in like end of September.
Mm-hmm. So we thought it would be fun to just kind of hear how it went and what folks were exploring in that, because it's just one of those places that, you know, we'll often hear Sherry talk about, you know, there are a number of topics that are just, they're just real. They're just true,
yeah.
Right? Money, health, kids. And kids is a big one, especially since,
Gosh,
you know, so many people have so many different opinions and belief systems, and they tend to be pretty strong about the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. So it's both a very rich place to practice and also one that people often, I think, get talked out of practicing with because it seems like, well, that's outside of practice. This is just true and real. So I thought it would be fun to just kind of explore what folks were looking at, what you all saw as you were doing that group coaching.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's so true. Before I kind of get into what folks saw, I'll just add my experience is there's no suffering like suffering around a child. You know, we talk about some really good places like money or, you know, job and chai and your children. Man, that's got to be right up there. And what I see about it and what I think people who were practicing with this, one of the things we talked about is it is the malevolent nature of ego to take that deep love that we have for our children and turn it into such ungodly suffering. You know, if you ever doubted the just evilness, you know, evil nature of conditioning, just to hear what parents go through is enough to, boy, there's just no way of overstating the dastardliness of ego. And so to have people who bring that into practice is such a gift. You know, for one thing, I'll own this projection, but I think there's a lot of shame around, you know, not being a good parent. You know, gosh, I remember when I came to practice, I was such a yeller, screamer, you know, at my kids. And one of the things that I just really credit practice with is weaning me off of that, but it was really just sort of, you know, I just dropped that particular exhibition of egocentric karma and even over the years, I think my kids even noticed it, you know, because it's just so there's a lot of shame attached to parenting and how I'm not doing it right. Here I'm a spiritual person, but I act like a raving lunatic sometimes around my kids, and you know, and that came out in the group coaching, and to hear that other people do it too. Oh my God, we're not alone. We're not just really bad people. Yeah.
Especially other spiritual people do it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, as you're talking, Rebecca, I'm just seeing how I just project that part of that is because that illusion of control that follows us around in every area of our life, it feels like that place in parenting would be such a ripe place for that, because there's this idea that, you know, when you see a child having a temper tantrum in the grocery store, I think people tend to think, God, why isn't that parent, like, doing something about that? Well, God knows if they could, they would, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this, I think that illusion that my kids are who they are and how they are because of me, I should have some control and influence over that. And so therefore, I'm supposed to feel ashamed if, you know, I'm acting a certain way or they're acting a certain way or, you know, this is what comes up, you know, I'm yelling or whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, and there's, you know, and if you know, like my dream would be for parents to to get that, what those, let's see how to say this. So we basically face head on the illusion of control when you're a parent. You know, from day one, you know, I cannot make this baby stop crying no matter what I do. I cannot make this 30-year-old call me on Christmas no matter what I do. You know, it's like, you know, whatever.
It goes on and on.
It's just a child, right? So the illusion of control has just got to, you know, it can either torture us for 50 years or we can practice with it for 50 years, you know? And so it is such an opportunity to see practice as the lens through which I'm going to raise this child instead of that raising a child is just something that I do along with practice and exercise and, you know, whatever. It's such an opportunity.
You know, as you're talking, it's like I'm just dropping in that it's an extraordinary act of service, right, to raise a child, an extraordinary act of service. And to use that process that you're talking about to assist me in my own awakening, because, of course, that's what we're doing with ourselves in it, right? We're sort of raising this person, if you will. I mean, we're that same process of care and attention and love, and I have no control. I have no control. I mean, just look at my mind, right? I have no control over this person.
Yeah.
It's that quote that Sherry talks about of do not despair.
That her mother had
you
in the cupboard door.
That you can't make someone else be how you wish them to be before you can't make yourself how you wish to be.
I love that.
It strikes me as you're talking that as a parent, you really could kind of, you've got this actual little person, and then you've got that same internal process. And as you're saying, to use it instead of as material for torture, to use it as such an opportunity for that care and deep respect and love in practice.
Oh, that is such an important point. Because, you know, when we get it that there are no other people, you know, that there are no others, that whatever I'm experiencing with this, you know, little snotty 8-year-old who's talking back to me, you know, is exactly what goes on internally. And when I can practice with it that way, which is a service to both that 8-year-old who, you know, and the person who's attempting to raise that 8-year-old, you know. And so it is, it's an opportunity to bring love really from the inside out. And that's what we looked at a lot on the coaching, you know, is how can we make it, because the tendency, of course, is to make it about the child. But how can we really have the courage to reshift that focus? Like, no, I've really got to be committed to ending my suffering and give up the preoccupation with fixing this other person. And that is, to me, it's just one of the most courageous movements a human person can make in spiritual practice.
Wow, and I can just feel it. Not even having had the direct experience myself, I can feel the challenge of that. The extraordinary surrender and letting go that we're invited into in that. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and part of what was a part of the coaching was recording and listening, because it was called Parenting with the Mentor. And so it was really about accessing that wisdom, which assists tremendously with making that movement we were just talking about.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, you almost can't do it without it. And I'm sure people are doing it all the time in an intuitive way, not necessarily calling it that. But, my gosh, without that sort of, you know, intelligence that's animating and being able to be guided by that, woo, parenting would be no fun at all.
Oh, it's rugged. It's a rugged. Yeah, it's a mystery. That's why I say there's no suffering like that, because if you don't have that, I mean, gosh, that have that tool, you know, in the old days it was our reassurances, right? And now it's the recording and listening and the two-handed recording exercise. And even, you know, one of the things we talked about a lot was to record and listen in front of our kids all the time. Not to turn on, you know, I don't know where we get this idea. We have to go off to the bathroom somewhere, close the door, get real quiet, you know, quiet so nobody hears us before we record and listen.
Mommy's talking on the phone.
I guess you wouldn't want to say, Mommy's going to go talk to the divine now. Would you leave me alone? But really and truly, what an example would that be, huh? To say, okay,
yeah.
I'm feeling like I'm about to explode the top of my head off, and I really need to work on this. So I'm going to pull out my recorder. You just go sit over there for a minute, and I'm going to go take care of it myself for a minute. We'll see where we are in 5 minutes, you know, and just do that, and then to come back and revisit whatever it is that, you know, we're doing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so inspiring. And thank you, segues beautifully to that we have a recording and listening training coming up for parents and kids to do together. And so, you know, what an amazing thing, right? You know what? I remember actually an exact example, someone calling into the radio show years ago and trying to get her, I think like 3 or 4 year old to get the boots on, right, to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And just that sense of like, you know, honey, get your boots on, and then let's get the boots on, and this is my version, I don't remember exactly, but put your boots on your shoes, and it gets to that point where it's just, you know, you just lose it. And so to have that, like, whoa, hang on, I'm in, and, you know, name it something, I don't know, whatever you name it, right? I think this is a recording and listening moment. What do you think, honey? Let's both pull out our recorders, shall we?
Yes.
I mean, it feels like it changed everything, because in that, no one really has to change. Like, I don't have to not have my experience. You don't have to not have your experience. Everyone gets to be how they are. We acknowledge that it's not necessarily how I want to be, how I would choose if I could choose it. But we're also acknowledging that I don't have control over what goes on with me, you know, what goes through me. And that's fine. Right?
Exactly. That's just the way it is. And your little 3-year-old gets to see that. And, you know,
right.
I can just project all kinds of humor, lightness, reality, you know, into this really volatile, angry, suffering place. And, what a gift for everybody involved. So to have that recording and listening for parents, you know, and I'm guessing it's for, you know, for any age kids. I don't really know that. But you know,
I don't know either.
Yeah, but to be able to do that with the child, and you know, it's something that Sherry says often, I've noticed when she's talking to parents on open air and whatnot, is not to focus on what the child, you know, basically you share your process. Don't kind of dig around and get them to share theirs. And so to have something like this where I, as a parent, am willing to be, shall we say, vulnerable and open. That's a better word. I'm willing to be open and just share what goes on for me, because you know what, honey? This is how life works. This is just how it works. And boy, what an invitation, you know, for a child who may otherwise feel, scrutinized, or don't look at me too closely because you're going to dig in, dry, you know, and but to have the parent lead the way.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. What an amazing topic. Well, we are definitely at the top of the hour, Rebecca. So
else you want to
say? I know. Can you believe it? Didn't we just start?
I get very excited about this. Sorry about that. I usually watch the clock.
Me too, and I'm not even a parent, so it must be a good topic.
No, nothing else to add. Just thanks for the opportunity. It's very fun.
Yeah, and thanks for making that connection, because the registration for signing up for that recording and listening with parents and kids is still open. I think actually, now that I think about it, when I looked at it, it might be that you need to be 11 as a child. But Michael and Ashwini, one of those folks, will let us know about that, I'm sure. But anyway, that was really, really fun. Thanks for being with us, Rebecca.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jen.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Rebecca. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. And it's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. I love that conversation.
Me too. It just made so many rich, I mean, I just love the enthusiasm of it more than anything else.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 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 We keep saying how practical practice is and how every piece of content can be used as a way to practice with. And kids seem to be one of those potent topics.
That's for sure. And I got a good tip, too, and that was to record right there in front of them.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That quality of being able to process your experience is one of the best ways of being with your experience and demonstrating how to live, right? Because if we're practicing presence, then that's what we're modeling, and hopefully that's what kids learn.
Right, right, exactly. And I like that tip to focus on my own process and talk about that rather than digging into my kids' process and trying to figure out what's wrong and fix them so I can control them.
Exactly. And I believe that recording and listening parenting class does have a prerequisite of age, so people should look that up before they sign up for it. Because there is a curriculum and skills that we're teaching, and so we're hoping to have kids who are of an age that can actually process their experience and learn to process their experience. So we might have a different class for different ages soon, but this particular class is for kids who are 11 and older.
Right, right. Great. And Ashwini, I have announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in a different direction.
No, absolutely not. Thank you very much. We have some exciting stuff coming up.
Yes, we do, including this Saturday, October 14th. Please join us in San Francisco for the 16th annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk to benefit the Africa Vulnerable Children Project. You don't want to miss this exciting and joy-filled community experience. And find out more about the Team 150K Challenge to support the Africa Project on the project's webpage at livingcompassion.org.
And, you know, Michael, it's truly not too late to sign up and come to the walk or to sign up for that 150K team. We're really wanting this to make it a Sangha event, and it takes everybody to support that project in Africa. So it's not too late. We're only 1 week away, but I was just talking to Jen about it, that a lot of people who pledged and who are part of Team 150K have pledges running through the end of the year and the beginning of next year, so it's not a requirement that your fundraiser end before the bridge walk.
Oh, great. Great. Good. Just like in practice, it's never too late to start.
It's never too late to start. And all endings are just made up anyway.
Yes, yes, exactly. And as we were just talking about, recording and listening is not just for grown-ups. Youngsters have reported feeling happier, calmer, kinder, and more relaxed using this fabulous practice tool. A fun and transformative parent-child recording and listening class is starting October 23rd. And celebrate 2017 and start the next year with Sangha at the New Year's Retreat, December 27th through January 1st in Menlo Park, California. The retreat features meditation, group discussions, yoga, guidance with Sherry, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can get in the queue and make guest show by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, that lasts about 5 minutes, is really helpful to everyone. Okay, Ashwini, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, great. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Yes. I have a question. It's funny that you're talking about children. I was abused severely as a child, and I'm going through therapy for overcoming the abuse. And so in reading about the processes that we go through, that one process leads to another, such as like worrying leads to more worrying and wanting leads to more wanting, I can't control the other people. And if they're being abusive to me, such as at work, where the manager is abusive and there's really nothing we can do about it because they're just like, oh, well, get used to it or leave. But I have to pay child support, and then my ex is not following the parenting plan and not allowing me to see my children. So I don't want to drag the children into the middle, though she has been. I just avoid it, and I just take more abuse. So in accepting, I would think that that would lead to accepting by going through the process. However, when I read, it says that if I'm accepting, then that leads to no suffering. That's kind of different from, like I said, it was worrying leads to worrying, wanting leads to wanting. So I would think accepting leads to accepting. I struggle with standing up for myself because, if I'm aggressive, then, and I want to defend myself, then I get labeled, and I just mean like verbally, just saying, hey, I would like you not to be mean to me anymore. That doesn't help. And then if I just take it, I just don't know how I'm seeing it wrong. Obviously I have wrong view. So I'm just wondering if I could get some clarity as to what I am missing, because I don't want to just give up on my children. Because then that self-hate would rise up in me. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, could you say your name again? I did not catch
it. My name is Phil. Thank you, sorry.
Phil.
Yeah.
And I think you were talking about the practice, the way we say it in practice is one process does not lead to another, right? So doing X does not result in Y. And so you accurately defined it, that if I'm worrying about something in order to be prepared for some eventuality in the future, that doesn't prevent the eventuality from happening. Worrying about it just ends up in worrying about it. And if I caught what you were saying, because there's a lot of content in that, and I just want to track it, that in the situation that you're in, you're watching something, and what you're practicing with is acceptance. Because if you are accepting the situation, then that's what you have. You have acceptance. And what you're noticing is that the acceptance is not resulting in not suffering.
Right.
Was that an accurate reflection?
Yeah, not suffering. And so, but when I read the books, there's nothing wrong with you, Sherry's, no matter what you're taught, there's nothing wrong with you, or any of her books, really, it says that if we accept anything, then that will lead to not suffering, which doesn't, so I guess I'm missing how I'm not.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm suffering. I do.
Okay. And how do you, can you say more about that? So what does the suffering look like?
It overwhelms me by not being able, to get my time with my children, and and not being able to stand up for myself and having to just accept the abuse into the situation so I can make my child support, because otherwise I gotta look for a new job and this job pays pretty well. So I can endure that. But the it just overwhelms me to a point where I shut down, because the way I'm wired is, I go into disassociation. So that's there is a mental thing there that I'm working on with neurofeedback. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So would you say that you're listening to a conversation? that part of the suffering is caused by a voice in the head, and maybe you experience it as that tells you all of this stuff, right? This is how you are. This is how you should be. This is how you're not being. This is how blah, blah, blah. Is that your experience?
Well, I guess you could take it that way. It's just, yeah, I mean, you know, I should get my time with my children. I just want to be a parent. So, again, if I'm not getting it, if I'm accepting the fact that I'm not going to get my time, then I just, you know, the only thing I can see is that I just need to be okay with that. I just, you know, and that for me is a struggle because I love my children and I feel like I'm a good parent. I'm trying to feel like I'm a good person. But apparently if I'm not getting my kids, just like whenever I get beat as a kid, you feel like, you know, there's a lot of shame that goes along with that. You get overwhelmed.
Yes.
I do anyway. And so, yeah, I mean, but again, I'm just trying to see that if I accept the abuse, I don't see any other way around it. Standing up for myself isn't working because I'm asking people not to be mean, and yet they still are. And so I don't...
Yeah.
I'm missing because I feel like I'm suffering. And I that voice in my head, whenever I start shutting down, whenever my body starts shaking uncontrollably to a point where I shut down, I don't know what to do.
Yes. Well, and here's something to explore, right, Phil? Because when you say I'm suffering, we start to pay attention to what that suffering is. What is the process of suffering? Sorry, can you hear me?
No, the process of suffering for me, like I said, is an internal, like it's a foggy feeling in my head, a shutting down of not engaging in life. And then I try to pay attention to whatever's going on, I'm overwhelmed. And so that's...
Yeah, so there is a lot of sensations, right? A lot of sensations produced by either a conscious or unconscious story of what it means. I can either, a duality, in fact, I either have to stand up to this abuse and I can't do that and therefore that means something about me, or I have to give in to the abuse and then that means something about me, right?
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. Say that again?
I say yes, I agree with that.
Yes. And so part of what we start to do with awareness practice is to actually pay attention to how those sensations in the body are caused by the attention being on that conversation?
It's still a struggle. I mean, it just...
Absolutely.
Obviously, I'm missing something. It's not... I'm struggling. I just suffer immensely.
Yes, absolutely. And have you had experience with our recording and listening practice?
Yes, that's what... I think that you get whatever you practice is what you have. I mean, that's, you know, I'm journaling in that and I'm recording, and then eventually it's going to be a whole thing and that'll be something that, you know, that I do here. That just doesn't change the fact that these people are not going to let me see my children. And I don't, and it's a struggle for me to accept that. I guess I'm missing the point. I'm missing the point completely. I'm not sure.
Well, perhaps and perhaps not, right, Phil, that the clarity isn't there yet, right? That the circumstances are the reason for what it is that you're experiencing, and perhaps the acceptance is in what you are experiencing, not the acceptance of the circumstance, but the acceptance of your experience.
I don't know any other way to experience it.
When the recording and listening is something that could be of great assistance. And there is a tool that we use often in this situation called the two-handed recording exercise, which you might want to explore. If you go to the recording and listening website, there is a way to support yourself in that process, right? That process of true acceptance. And to discover what's going on for you, because part of what we do in this practice is to find the compassion for the human who is suffering. Because if you are suffering and in the place of suffering, it's very hard to do something for yourself because you're so identified with the suffering, right? But if we are able to bring compassion to that situation, there's a way in which we can hold the human who is suffering and find out ways that we can support that person and embrace that person in compassion.
Right. It's kind of, I guess, you're the big brother to the little child. You know, and you're there to protect or to hold and to support and encourage.
To just accept that experience of what that person is going through. Because we may not be able to change the circumstances, but are we able to assist the person who's going through those circumstances?
Okay. All right. That's going to be okay.
Truly, the way to read about the two-handed reporting exercise, it's called the Power Tool on the Reporting and Listening website.
Okay.
And here's a shorthand version of it, right? You take the recorder in your right hand, and you go to that place of that person who so sincerely wants to be a parent, right? Who so wants to have time with their child and wants to have time with them and feels like they can't do, that they're suffering because they can't stand up for themselves or it doesn't work or whatever it is, right? Just talk right from that place of intense suffering that you've just been articulating.
Right.
You make the recording on the right hand, then switch the recorder to the left hand, take a deep breath, and then listen to that recording as if you were listening to your best friend or your child or the person you love most in the world. Just listen.
Okay.
Listen to that recording, then turn on the recorder, and then see what arises to offer to that person, right? If all the love and compassion in the world was on your side listening to that recording, what would that say?
Okay.
And then once you finish recording that, you listen to it and see what the wisdom has to offer the person who's suffering.
Okay. So see what.
And then call back in and let us know.
Okay, thank you. I'll do that.
Because it is a process, Will. It's so important that it's a process. You know, we have to practice our way into it, and it's a step-by-step process.
Right. You know, usually that's what happens is if I get overwhelmed, I come back into the, I sit with it and then if I enter back in and the energy does not come up and I'm able to just let it go or, the level is less, and then I know that whatever I've done is working. If it remains the same, then I need to try something different. So I have not tried this. So again, I'm always open to trying something and not listening to my thoughts about, oh, that's not going to work. Because, I just got to be open and give it a try,
It's brilliant because what that suffering process is attempting to do is to shut you down, right? You experience that as a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And what is arising for you in response to that is, no, I refuse to let that happen. I'm going to try how to keep that channel open, that channel of the love that you experience as yourself.
Right. And I just have to be willing to give it a try. Yeah.
Exactly. We have to be willing to not let, to choose something other than suffering, right? Because we're on the path of ending it.
Well, I have to learn
how to tremendous. Yeah, it's
to work
tremendous.
With work. I have to work with suffering, right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're making that choice. You have that willingness, that warrior energy that assists you not to just give in to that process that takes away your life. That is an extraordinary way of standing up for yourself.
Okay, great. Well, again, I knew I was missing some point, so I do appreciate, and I will give it a try and let you know how it works. Thank you so much for taking the time
to
speak with me. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Phil. Ashwini, I'm just so impressed by the courage of Phil calling in and the willingness to look and to learn and to continue to show up for ourselves. It's extraordinary.
It is truly extraordinary. It is. And we don't get any credit for it, do we, Michael?
No, which is why we have to hang together with each other here and support ourselves. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And we have another caller here, Ashwini.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Drew from Illinois.
Hi, Drew.
Hi.
Hi, Drew.
Hi, Shwini. Hi, Michael. So I made a commitment to myself. I called in a few weeks ago and talked to Sherry about working around some karmic content, this lifetime long thing. I was involved in a cult when I was a kid with my family, or part of my family, and after the Enneagram class, had some big shifts happen in that area, and it just dropped into me. It's like, wow, this is something that I could really practice with, like on a, you know, Sherry talks about kind of practicing with what comes up, and I've done that for a long time, and I thought this is a piece of content that's just always seems to be so up and so heavy, you know, so it's such a barrier in my life, and it's such a big piece of content that it's something that I would sort of like to actively pursue. And so I've been doing that, and I made a commitment to call in every week and at least try to get through if I can. And so I know that I have I probably do have a lot to say, but there's been a lot going on. I'm a little foggy, and hearing you guys talk about working through suffering, I'm in sort of the suffering part right now, but still manage to call in spite of all the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're practicing.
And like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So you're practicing.
I am. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a miracle.
Yeah.
That's what I talked to Sherry about last time, because that's been the biggest change since I've kind of decided to work on this is to kind of face this. Usually I would become sort of a victim to the voices and to, because it was very convincing content for me. And and literally, like the last caller, like my body would get taken over. It's like I'm, you know, getting shut down, and like I don't own this body or my mind. It was just like I got so small in that process. So, and today was a day like that. I spent most of my day in bed, and like I said, I'm feeling very foggy and like I'm not really inhabiting my body. But I'm grateful to be able to somehow have made the call today and push through. And so that's where I'm at.
Well, and you know, Drew, the thing that keeps coming up in practice, right, that there isn't some state of being that we're going for. We're in the practice of ending suffering, which means that we experience that, right? The human experience of either having, we're either encountering something and in the middle of it, or transcending it, or finishing up this piece before we get to the next piece, right? There's no, it's so, such a conditioned interpretation that it feels a certain way or should be felt in a certain way. And what you're describing is a process of ending suffering, right? Of recognizing that I'm in it. There's such a tremendous awareness that you're in it, and it's different from before, where when you're in it, there isn't that awareness, and there's that only that contraction. But since you've been practicing with it, there's an awareness of that process going on, and you can actually talk about your experience of it. You're present to it, right?
Yeah.
You can say, oh, wow, I'm feeling a bit foggy, and I spent my time in bed, and so I'm in it, but I'm still keeping my commitment. I'm still making the choice for me, for the human
being. Right.
And
that's
such a tremendous Yes, it's miraculous. And to me, that is, if we have a word for success at all in practice, that's what it is, right? That no matter what my experience is, I can be with it in compassion.
Yes. Well, there's a piece I'm working on right there, you know,
mm-hmm.
the compassion during these periods. Well, I'm just at the point where it's like I'm seeing that doing practice doesn't necessarily mean feeling good. I mean, I've been experiencing that for a long time, but then sticking with it, you know, and saying, okay, just because I'm not feeling good doesn't mean I'm a bad person or I did something wrong or I'm doing practice wrong or, you know, whatever. It's just this is part of the process. This is the purging, whatever it is, burning off karma. I don't know. You know, it's just where I am, and not going through the frenzied mind thing of trying to figure out what I did wrong and how can I fix it. And you know,
Go ahead. Sorry.
But just to sort of in one sense give into it. Physically, I did give into it and go to bed, but at the same time, you know, I'm doing my best to keep an awareness, and I would love some more compassion around it. I would love, because I really, the voices just take this opportunity to just, you know, pummel me. So,
Yeah. And I think that is where you reach for the recorder, and then you talk to Drew and say, you know what, it's okay. Right? At this point, you're feeling like you need to lie down. I'm lying down here with you. It's completely fine. Completely okay. Right? Whatever you are going through, I'm here for you with it. There's nothing wrong. And so it's your insight that you just mentioned converted into a recording, right? Because no matter how I feel, it doesn't mean anything. Because what the voices have trained us to do is to associate a particular meaning to a particular feeling, right? So if I feel this way, that means I'm doing something wrong, or I haven't done something right, or practice is not working, or whatever that means. And
right.
What you are closing in on is that none of that is true. What I'm feeling has nothing to do with what the voices are saying about what that means. And so I can just stay with the feeling. Oh, I'm feeling crummy. Well, what does that even mean? Well, I feel like going to bed, all right? That's where the energy is right now. And there's an acceptance. It's what we were talking about with Phil. There's an acceptance of your experience.
Yes.
That's how it. And if you take the recorder out and start to talk about that or talk to the person who is going through that, then that is being with the experience, right? Rather than listening to the voice that says, you shouldn't feel that way, or you've given up, or you gave into it today. You're not trying hard enough, right? That's what the voices want to narrate the narrative of the voices to what you're experiencing. But if you pull out the recorder and you're talking to that person to say, yeah, you're tired. Okay, let's take a nap. Or you did such a good job. You put yourself in the queue. You are still practicing with your commitment. Way to go. It really doesn't matter what those voices are saying about your feelings. It doesn't make you a bad person. In fact, your goodness is already established, right? It's the encouragement, the support that replaces what those voices are making a meaning out of.
Yeah. You nailed it on the head there with the you're not trying hard enough. I think that's the voice that really, that probably I collude with a little bit. I feel like I've got one foot in the light room and one foot in the dark room with that. So I still sort of believe that I'm not, you know, that still I'm not doing everything that I can, in spite of the fact that I also did yoga and cooked healthy food today and, did, you know, I did
Yes,
a lot of things.
Exactly.
I had a productive day, but
it's always a clue.
Yeah.
It's always that clue, right? So as soon as you hear that voice that says you're not trying enough, then it signals you to go, what did I do today that is true? And that's one of the tools we use with recording and listening. The voice, when the voices say this, they lie because what is true is. And then we direct the attention to everything that the voices don't want us to see that we actually did do.
Right. Yeah. That's very good to hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew.
Yeah. So I'll.
And we'll see you again on the show soon.
I'll call again. Thank you so much. Thanks, Michael.
Take care.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Drew. A lot of more courage out there. I'm so impressed. There's due practice,
yeah.
Showing up and participating. It's just so inspiring for me gives me the courage to keep going and participating.
Yes, sure does. It is. It's completely inspiring. And, in some way, right, Michael, it allows us to, A, know what we're up against, and B, to know that we're not alone in being up against it. And C, as someone who I coach with often says, there's a lot of successes and happy stories of practice which are really, really important. But it's so inspiring to see Sangha go up against something, the content that they're suffering with, and talk about how they're working with it. And in some way, that's really inspiring because it gives all of us a way, right, not to feel isolated and alone, that I'm the only person who's got this problem that I don't seem to be getting anywhere with and everybody else is having these practice successes.
Yes, yes. And as you're talking, I can hear Sherry saying, whoever said it was supposed to be easy? And it just re-inspires me to show up. And Sherry says, if it were easy, more people would be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find the willingness and we get the guidance and we follow the guidance. And then we participate again to find out what the next step is from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great process.
It is a great process.
And Ashwini, we are going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we're going to be back to talk with more callers.
Excellent.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have more callers here.
Excellent.
Okay, just a moment here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Well, hello, Michael and Ashwini. This is Ann calling from the Bay Area. I had no idea I would get on. I'm so
sorry.
Hi, Ann.
I'm cutting over a cold, so I have a different voice. But I should have said, I always say I'm calling from the Bay Area, but I will say this time that I'm calling from Sonoma County, where all the wildfires are raging. I had a reflective listening buddy's call this morning, and I was just so struck at how grateful I am for practice, because I felt like, how Sherry talks about practice, or we all talk about practice being preparation for death. I felt like, wow, practice is such great preparation for something like this. And I thought of everybody at the monastery when they had to evacuate because of the fires. And I just felt so guided by life. You know, I just did the next step. I'm fine. And, you know, I know people who've lost everything. But it was just a totally okay experience because I felt like I had practice to rely on. And mm-hmm. I just was so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it's such gratitude I project, right, Anne, that we have a way to be present to the situation. And that's
yes.
really it, right? The preparation is being able to be present to it and to know that sense of well-being no matter what the circumstances.
Yes, and in my experience, you know, to let life guide. I mean, I just felt like the way I found out about it. I happened to wake up really early in the morning because I had a migraine and I had to get up and take a pill. And then I thought, well, I'm going to turn the radio on. Who knows what possessed me to find out NPR was not working. And I, you know, anyway, just all the little things that happened where I found out what was going on. I was able to let people know. I was able to help our local hospital because all these, they evacuated two hospitals. So, I mean, it just, and through it all, what amazed me was how calm I was. I mean, I didn't freak out. I watched people freak out around me, and I was just like, you know, that's really not necessary. I don't know. I mean, it was one of those things where I thought, how did this happen? And the only thing I can attribute it to is practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. That there are two things that drop in when you say that, right, Anne? That the ability to be here allows us to receive that information from life, that expanded awareness, that guidance of what to do next, what to do next, what to do next, which that mental chatter, you know, if we couldn't be here and we were listening to that, we freak out or we're afraid or we give in to the conditioned reaction, which makes us so not useful, as you're talking about, not useful to anyone else and certainly not useful to ourselves in taking care of ourselves and taking care of everything and everybody that's in our life to take care of. It makes us really people of service.
People of service? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And the place it leaves me is just one, it just makes me want to up my game. It makes me want to practice more
mm-hmm.
because, you know, to be ready. I mean, and then, of course, I realize, well, every moment is that moment, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, every moment is that moment. And we can, in some odd way, we recognize how practiced we are when one of those moments arises and we can greet it with presence. I had
yes.
a similar experience of being called to the site of an accident recently. And watching,
uh-huh.
right, the fire trucks and the police vehicles and the traffic being rerouted and just the pounding in my heart for the person who I knew was involved in the accident. And
mm.
to be present, right, to know what the traffic looked like and to talk to the police and then to find the information and life guiding every step of the way in what was, without any information, a life and death situation. And
yes.
yet not going to that conditioned sense of panic or that conditioned sense of not being here. I mean, there's no other word to describe it, right? It's just not being here.
Yes, and how in those moments of heightened, I don't know what you want to call it, danger or heightened importance or whatever, a heightened awareness maybe, to realize how not helpful it is to go into those conversations and to spin out. I don't know. It's just like everything's on steroids. And for me, at least, I see, wow, this is what we're up against. This is what we practice for. And then to realize that that's available. Letting life guide is available every moment. I don't know. It was just very profound experience, and still is.
Yes. Well, and what something else that you're pointing at is two things. One, that in those heightened circumstances, the marvel of the practice comes through, right? That life doesn't fail us in some senses. It's there. It's right there, able to be skillful and to be aware and present and of service. And that itself is a glorious experience of life, which we have to practice in order to receive and to take that knowledge, that awareness of that ability to every moment, no matter how high the stakes, it's just upping your game, as you said earlier. It doesn't have to just happen at the moment of death or the moment of tragedy.
Yes.
It can happen in every moment.
Yes, and I had this person near me was like freaking out, and she was like went into this, I don't know what to do. And it just kind of one of those moments where it just arose, because this is her language. I just looked at her and I said, well, you could pray. And she just looked at me and she was like, oh my God. I had to have a Buddhist remind me that that's what, I mean, it was the perfect thing to say to her, which I didn't know it. I mean, it just like cut through everything. It calmed her down. And she's just like, she got here, I guess. I just realized that that's what happened. It brought her right here.
Yeah, that is extraordinary, because life does know the perfect. It does know what to say, right? I might not, but life does. And to get out of the way and let that flow through, what a magnificent experience.
Yeah, well, it's clear I have no clue, you know? I mean, it's just clear. And the other thing that was so amazing to me, Ashwini, was that, you know how, Sherry, and I talked about this on my Reflective Listening Buddy call, it must be important because I want to say it again, how she talks about when you're at center, there's a knowing, but if somebody said to me, how do you know that, or are you sure, you would have to say, well, I don't know, no, I'm not sure. You know, there's not any certainty in it, there's just a sense. So if somebody, I had a sense that everything was okay and that to move in this direction, and if somebody had said to me, well, how do you know your house isn't going to burn down, I would have to say, I have no clue. You know, I don't know. But so it's just that weird place of, I don't even know where the words are for it, because there's no certainty, there's no knowing, and yet there's a sensing of a direction to move in.
Mm-hmm,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. If I may reflect what you're saying, there is no sense of knowing, and yet there is an absolute knowing of well-being, right? It's going to be okay. And I don't know if this is your experience, Anne, but mine is because we don't know, the conditioned sense of knowing is around content, which you can never know.
Right.
Right? I don't know if my house is going to burn or not, but that's not the knowing that you were resting in at center.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Right?
That's helped. Yeah. It's just the knowing is, I'll be guided to do what's next, and what's next right now is this, and okay.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The sense of knowing is that of the unknown, right? That expanded place of everything is life. It's a way we could point to non-separation. This
That's
is life.
That's a beautiful,
and therefore they
beautiful
can be,
way of putting it. Yeah. The sense of the knowing is the unknown. That's. I mean, it sounds very contradictory, but it describes it perfectly.
Yeah. Exactly so. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm Project Joy.
Not related to content.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's just not related to content.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I just loved, you know, I was listening to Project Joy this morning, and it was just so wonderful to hear somebody talking about calling to check in on his friend who was in the fire, and just, you know, him, but his focusing on his own process. You know, I don't know. There was just something so reassuring about it. And then having somebody talk about being guided to do magic tricks. And I just thought, you know, that's just so perfect, because in one moment we can be guided to, you know, help in a raging fire where people are losing their homes. In another moment we can be guided to entertain somebody to help them laugh with magic tricks. That it's not the content, it's that process of being guided by life that is so inspiring.
Yes. My words for that is intelligence is so fascinating to be in conversation with.
Yes,
so
when you can, yes, because what I just saw was ego always has an idea of what that should look like and how that should be and what is right. And, of course, what life guides us to never meets that standard or that mismark.
And yet it's so completely aligned, right? You don't feel dissonance because it's so appropriate.
Yes. I mean, it's perfect, but it would, you know, ego would never would never guess. From ego's perspective, it's so far out of left field because it has nothing to do with its sense of right and wrong and this is how it should be.
Yeah.
And yet it's so organically perfect.
Yes. Yes, so organically perfect. Magic trick, or looking at your own process, or telling a Buddhist telling someone to pray, right?
Yeah, anyway, I just felt so connected to Sangha in the whole process, you know, because I felt like, you know, if I felt like Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha, you know, that Sangha had was with me, that it, all this practice had given me this this foundation to stand on, and then just listening to, I don't know, somehow listening to Project Joy this morning, it was just so reassuring. And so I just really wanted to call in and say thank you to everybody for practice.
And thank you, and because I no doubt that this is going to be inspiring to someone. It's just the way it is, right? Because if we go back to that sense of non-separation, what we do, what we feel in that perfection of the unknown is the connection to everything and everybody. And the only thing we can say is thank you.
That's thank you, Ashwini. That, you know, that's so helpful to know. Oh, what I contribute is helpful to somebody else, and what everybody else has contributed has been so incredibly helpful to me. So I've just been so moved in this situation by everybody's kindness, and what I feel is, wow, it just moves me to tears right now. It's the kindness of Sangha to have been willing to call in or risk or go up against conditioning in whatever way people do, and just being bathed by that all year in our, you know, our practices has just been such a gift for me. So, yeah, I didn't realize that's where I was going with this, but that's just so true. So anyway, thank you to everybody, and thank you to you and Michael for the show.
Thank you, Anne.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. Wow, another powerful conversation, Ashwini.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. It's intoxicating to rest in that place of center because it gives us access to so much in life that conditioning shuts out.
Yes. And what dropped in during your conversation, Ashwini, is that in those heightened circumstances, when I can remain present, the first thing that's true is that other people don't have to worry about me or take care of me, or because I'm taking care of myself, first of all. And then the second thing is I can actually be of helpful response when I'm there and present to life as it unfolds.
Yes, exactly so. Yeah, we are a different way that Sherry says it is we're the social relief, right? Not only are we not contributing to the suffering, we're actually in a position to alleviate it by our sheer presence. You know, that knowing that there's nothing wrong is the best gift that you can offer in any situation.
Yes. And Ashwini, I think we have time for one more caller. It's about 5 minutes to the hour. So I'll bring that caller on. Next caller. You are now.
Hello, hi, Isa.
Hi,
sorry, please. Hi.
Hi, Isota.
Hi. Oh, my God, everything was so inspiring. It was a fantastic call. Thank you so much to everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Can you hear
everyone.
Me?
Oh. And I bet you're going to inspire us, too.
You are going to inspire me because I have a specific question that I committed to my coach to ask, which is exactly when we count our breath when we are meditating, when do we start back from one? Like, for example, if we find out that we are thinking about something else, but we still have the count right, do we go on or do we start from one?
You're going to have to give me an example, Isota.
For example, I'm meditating. One, two, three. Okay, I'm going shopping. Four, after this, five. And I'm going to buy some apples. Six. Oh, my God, I was thinking. At that point, do I start from one or do I continue?
It is such an interesting question, isn't it? Do you, here's a question to explore. So when that, when you are aware of four, and then you say, I'm going shopping, are you present?
Mm-hmm.
Are you present?
Absolutely not.
The fact that the you're not? So,
no, I'm not present. I come back when at six, more or less, when I realize, oh, my God, I was thinking about shopping.
Yeah. Well, that's just interesting because it's something for you to play with and see. Because if I notice that I am the guidance in training the mind, in training in meditation is, if I notice I'm going off, then I come back to one. Because I've gone off and I'm coming back. But if I've never gone and I watch that thought arise between numbers and I'm present to the thought arising, have I really gone or am I here?
Ooh. So it is true that it's possible to notice the thought arising and still be here.
Isn't it your experience of expanded
awareness? It is. So in that case, okay. Yes, okay. So I'll have to try on and then call back in a bit because I had this idea that I was either totally able to have laser focus just on the breath and the number, or that I was lost. I didn't think that it was possible not to be lost and still note and still think about the shopping, but noticing it. But now that you say it, yes, it's not being totally lost.
Yes, and so then it's interesting, right? Because now we start to expand, start to play with attention on awareness. What does that really mean? What does expanding the awareness mean when you're meditating?
You know, now that you say it, then I will stop because the time is over, but it kind of feels like a lot of people are thinking at the same time, but on different layers. Like one is thinking, then there is another one on top, and another one on top, and another one on top, kind of. Is it what it feels like or not?
Yes. Well, and to me, so whenever we start any practice, right, there's a structure that assists us to anchor ourselves in attention and awareness, and that's what we start meditation with. But as we start to meditate, we notice a whole bunch of things. And the whole assistance for meditation, I mean, what we're attempting to do is awareness practice, which we don't want to leave at the door of the meditation hall when we walk into the meditation hall. right?
Mm-hmm.
So
oh my God, I'm
to start to pay attention to.
Oh, fantastic! I'm looking forward to meditate now, so I can notice
yes.
it better. But
and just to make sure that what we're not saying is don't count to 10, don't come back to 1. None of that, right? The structure of meditation continues to be the structure of meditation because if the structure can change whenever conditioned mind wants it to change, then it's of no assistance to us. But within the structure, there's such a freedom of exploration, and that happens because the awareness expands, and we start paying attention on awareness and then see what happens.
Fantastic. I have a little bit more of clarity. Thank you so much. Then I will experiment and we'll come back.
I know you will. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And good luck for Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Isota. Another inspiring show, Ashwini. This is great.
Another inspiring and inspires me to go sit.
Yes, me too. And I can look at meditation now.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, and I want to,
exactly.
Yes, and I want to thank you for joining us tonight. It was great to have you here. Really appreciate your presence and guidance and awareness. It's lovely.
Thank you, Michael. Same to you. And we'll probably talk to Sherry next week.
All righty. Thanks, Ashwini.
Take care, Michael.
Take care. Bye.